He heard the pinging sound of the bullet hitting the door behind him, and out of the corner of his eye, he noticed the trail of sparks from the contact. But his brain didn't have time to make the connection, and he died ignorant of his own death. All but a half dozen men and a couple of the dogs died instantly. And the ones that did survive were blinded, naked, hideously burned, their bodies thrown 40 yards away in every direction. Ryan, clinging to the living rock for his own life, felt the shockwave pass over him like the beating of the wings of the Angel of Doom, the heat taking his breath for a moment. A few large chunks of stone dropped to the ground, edges charred and blackened by the explosion, and several of the twisted drums that had held the gasoline. Ryan looked up, seeing the sky was filled, blotting out the sun. He pointed upward, trying to warn the other three, then shielded his head as best he could. Fortunately, the force of the blast carried most of the heavier chunks of granite and metal toward the north loop of the Sorrow. But smaller lumps of stone, some the size of a baseball, began to thud on the turf and patter in the river. One big as a hen's egg hit Ryan on the left shoulder, bringing a sharp dart of pain. A piece of gray metal he recognized as an old flash suppressor from an M16 landed in the mud of the bank near his left hand. A jagged buttstock off another blaster dug out a gouge in the grass a yard in front of him. Then came the meat. You could hardly describe it as being any functioning part of human bodies or animal. It fell all around them, covering them in a slick coating of sticky crimson dew with gobs of flesh and glittering white bone. Eventually, even the bloody mist ceased, and a momentary quiet descended. Then a dog began to howl. Ryan, ears still ringing, squinted over the lip of the bank, wiping blood from his face. He saw the animal, smashed against the trunk of one of the tall trees, or one of the trees that had been tall seconds earlier. The dog, hardly recognizable, was a broken husk of the proud hunting animal that had padded out of the ville. Now it was blind and broken and close to death. Only one of the sec men was still conscious. He had been at the back of the press, saved from instant slaughter by the bodies of his fellows. Now Ryan could see him lying like a discarded puppet, thrown into the smoldering undergrowth near the trail.
That's all of them.
Ryan stood up, tried to brush himself clean, but found that his hands were covered in blood. Christy climbed the steep bank, dusting off her clothes.
Gaia, the smell of gas. The world's filled with it.
JB was next up. He'd taken the precaution of tucking his fedora into the front of his jerkin, and he pulled it out and beat it on his knee, placing it carefully back on his head.
That worked well. Where's your brother?
Seen Fat Javi, on horse there.
The boy wore only a thin shirt, having sacrificed his own jacket to help fool the sec men. He pointed toward the high earth bank, near where the dying man lay.
Gone now. Hill would protect him and horse.
Ryan nodded. He, too, had seen his brother's grotesque hat bobbing above the top of the slope just before he'd squeezed the trigger on the M16.
Probably halfway back to the ville by now.
Where we should be.
The armorer looked down at his hands and clothes.
Be good to wash up some on the way, though.
Ryan looked around the stinking shambles. The land was littered with pieces of stone and fragments of twisted metal, and the bushes and torn trees around were draped with what looked like the contents of several butcher's stores, draggled and dripping. In all his years with the trader, which had encompassed much chilling, Ryan had never seen such a totally appalling slaughterhouse. Jack wandered around, picking his way between the puddles of watery mud and blood. He called out that one or two of the sec men still retained a kind of life, but only the man flung against the bushes was still conscious.
Lost arm and leg. One eye gone. Other leg broke, and bits of bone showing.
Ryan joined the boy and looked down at the remnants of his brother's soldier.
Mom, what would it be here? Stop, Mom.
Nothing to keep us here.
We going back to the big house?
That's where Doc and Lori are. And that's where my brother is. I've come this far to settle up the account. Might as well walk the last mile to finish it.
A quarter mile away from the scene of the explosion, they found a pool of pure, still water, unsullied by gas or by blood. In turn, they knelt and washed away as much of the human detritus as they could. Jack rinsed out his mouth, spitting away the taste of death. JB was stooped on the ground, hands cuffed, the others around him, when Christy suddenly snatched at Ryan's arm.
Listen.
He swung around to probe the forest with the carbine.
What?
Someone's there.
Christy pointed into the deepest part of the undergrowth, where Ryan could just make out a dark silhouette. The figure stood watching them. Before he could challenge the stranger, the branches of the witch hazel parted, and out walked Nathan Freeman, holding his Smith & Wesson.
The nicest of afternoons, Uncle Ryan. Would that great explosion have something to do with you?
The Virginian told them about Doc Tanner and Lori Quint's abortive attempt to infiltrate the Ville, how it had gone wrong, and how the word was they were held prisoners in the cells of the guardhouse. Nate also outlined what he had done, waiting for the news of Ryan and the others. Hearing of the death hunt, he had followed the killer dogs and Sekhmen. He hefted his blaster.
I decided that I'd try for the Baron with this if he'd had you all chilled. Then the sky opened yonder. Heard me some chem storms over the Shens. Never nothing like that. Thought the nukes were back again. Then I glimpsed the Baron, face like a madman, double stoop, galloping toward the Ville, streaked with blood and dirt. Thought I'd come see what had been going down with you.
They all died.
What? That can't be, Uncle.
You keep calling me Uncle, and I'll start calling you Nephew. Understand, Nate?
Sure, Ryan. But all of them? That's 9/10 of the Sekhmen from the Ville.
Guess that's about right.
And Harvey's driven clear crazed. That means that anything could be happening back at Front Royal right now.
That's right. Which is why we're heading there. Back to the Ville. Homeward bound.
Sec Trooper Baker was in charge of the main gateway into the Ville, with Sec Trooper Lesser as his companion. They were two of the dozen or so guards left behind when Baron Carter had ridden out to hunt an hour past noon. They'd watched him go, each man rigidly at attention, carbines at port arms. The Ville was quiet now. Word had quickly gotten around the small settlements that surrounded the main house, word that the long-lost Lord Ryan had returned and been captured. Word that, during the day, he and his companions would become the victims of the hunting pack of crossbred hounds. It was something over an hour later. Neither man was sufficiently high in the rankings of the Sekhmen to merit his own kron, and they were talking quietly about the merits of a two-edged knife against a single blade. Then the explosion came, with a shockwave that fluttered dried leaves on the cobbles leading to the drawbridge, rippling the surface of the filthy moat. The noise was like 100 distant peals of thunder, collected into one great booming crash. Baker jumped, nearly dropping his M16.
Oh! Oh! May blessed Ryan save us.
The words were out before he could stop them. But his companion was too startled himself to notice the treasonable utterance bursting from Trooper Baker. A cloud of smoke gushed straight up. It was dark and oily, and Lesser's sharp sight picked out black shapes that rose within it, and then fell again into the trees. The light breeze tugged at the toppling crown of the smoke, tearing it into ragged streaks of gray. Within a couple of minutes, the wind brought the faint smell of gasoline to the two men, overlaid with another scent, oddly familiar, yet elusive. It reminded Lesser of something in the kitchens, but he couldn't say what. Neither man knew quite what he should do. The explosion certainly had come from the direction of the Oxbow Loop, where the hunting always took place, and it had been a truly awesome explosion. But what did it mean? That was the question. Neither man even knew who was supposed to be in charge of the Ville anymore. The Baron was gone, and he'd taken virtually everyone with him, including the senior sec officer. Lesser wondered nervously if one of them ought to go and tell Lady Rachel about the explosion. But that meant going all the way to her suite of rooms and risking her anger if she was sleeping. Or busy. And both men knew what busy might mean to the Baron's wife. So they did nothing. About half an hour later, Baker heard a horse coming toward them at a fast canter from the general direction of the Oxbow Loop Road, and they could hear shouting. With barely a dozen men in the whole Ville, there was no question of turning out the guard. All they could do was move cautiously back inside the main gateway, readying their M16s for whatever might be approaching them.
It's the Baron.
Lost his hat.
Cloak's torn.
Gone star crazy shouting like that.
The horse was lathered, rolling from side to side with utter exhaustion, stumbling as it reached the far end of the drawbridge, nearly tipping Harvey Carter in to join his son. He hung along the neck, eyes wide and shot with blood, mouth open. It was difficult to make out any words in the harsh raging.
Nevermore! All fucked! My brother comes in!
Once inside the courtyard, Baron Harvey Cotter slithered from the saddle and fell to the cold stones, lying on his face, weeping. The two Sekhmen were joined by another from the guardhouse.
He smells like gasoline!
And he's drenched in blood.
Where's the others, my lord? They coming, my lord?
Harvey turned, and they all took an involuntary step backward. The face they saw was scarcely human. The eyes were frozen, the pupils like the pricks of a needle. The color had gone completely, and there were deep furrows etched around mouth, nose, and eyes. Hundreds of tiny specks of crusted blood dotted his cheeks, matting the scorched hair. His whole body trembled.
Coming? Who? Brother Ryan? Nevermore! Never, ever, evermore!
Where's the rest of the men and dogs, my lord?
Baker was showing amazing courage to press the madman, or incredible foolishness. Lesser went back on the drawbridge, shading his eyes with his hand. The wind had freshened, veering to the east, with the promise of colder weather and some rain within the next day or so. The roads all around the ville were deserted.
Nobody coming. Not a sight of them.
What about the rest?
Harvey rose to his feet, drawing the remnants of his tattered dignity around him.
The rest, my good fellow, are gone. Gone. Chewed. Blown to a better place or world or whatever. Each dog and each horse and each man are here in my face. Each spot alive and all chilled by my brother. I think he will be here shortly, so keep good watch.
He clapped Baker on the shoulder and then kissed him on the cheek. He turned on his heel and waddled crookedly away into the main body of the great ville. Baker gathered together the remaining Sekhmen, talking in whispers of what had happened. Their lord was utterly insane. His wife, a jolt junkie, and his son disappeared in a bloody mist. All of their fellows were slain in some gigantic explosion, and the ville was surrounded by hundreds of villagers, all waiting for the moment to rise against Front Royal and take their vengeance for the years of bloody oppression. And that vengeance would also spill against the Sekhmen, who'd help the Cotters keep their hold on that part of the Shens.
And Lord Ryan will come, and he's going to hold us responsible.
It took only 4 or 5 minutes for the dozen Sekhmen to reach their decision. Within 15 minutes, they had gone and changed into civilian clothes, out of the ville's heated uniforms, making their way by ones and twos into the surrounding woods.